Flashback Twin Cities, 2nd of March, Saturday morning. A cold morning here on KLDB Club 1220. James, how is it going in there? Is it as cold in your booth as it was outside?
Oh no, it's nice and toasty in here. George has been keeping my space a little bit nice and warm for me.
I had the space heater there, I think, right?
That's right.
Yeah, it's March in like a lamb, even though it is a little bit brisk out there. But hopefully a few weeks from now, we'll be talking about this great spring weather.
It's one of these weird, I stepped outside. I know it's like 7 degrees out there, but it doesn't feel that bad just because the wind isn't pouring down the river.
You know, we talk a lot about weather on the show, and it's only because it's usually that first pulse you get when you walk outside on Saturday morning and feel the wind against your face or the cold air. But we have a guest today, Roy Findon, who does know a lot about weather, and also a broadcaster at KSDP and radio and an instructor at Brown College for 35 years. He'll be talking to us about his days at KSDP and instructing at Brown. So did you notice the gas prices have been going up a lot?
Oh, I've noticed.
Yeah, I think it was $3.65, I think, when I went to work one day, and it was $3.95, I think, when I had to get gas that afternoon.
Jeez. Yeah, what was it, $2.99, $3.05 around election time?
Funny how that happens, right?
Yeah, it just kind of bumped up. Strange.
Well, different show for that topic. But, you know, the big concern 30 years ago was, are gas prices too low? Can gas companies survive with the low gas prices? Prices are falling. We're getting all this foreign oil, and our gas prices were dropping. So I want to play a clip. This is from 1984, and Debbie Ely, who was on our show about 2 months ago, she provided this clip for me. This is her reporting on gas prices in the Twin Cities.
But this year, the opposite seems to be true. Debbie Ely is here to explain why the good news.
Don, the reason is really simple economics. The present plentiful supplies have resulted in lower prices.
Prices at Twin Cities service stations have dropped at least a penny over the last month. Nationwide, prices are about 11.5% lower than in May 1981.
It's basically due to decline in consumption. Consumption is down 20% from what it was in 1978.
The lower consumption comes at a time when oil refineries are loaded with gas. Gas is a byproduct of home heating oil, and they processed a lot of home heating oil last winter because the temperatures were so cold. In fact, some oil analysts say that even if the oil supply from the Persian Gulf is cut off due to war, we'd still have enough supply for 5 or 6 months. But while low prices and ample supplies give motorists cause to smile, service station operators are wearing long faces.
Their margin is at an all-time low right now. When you compare 1972 to today, 1972, a service station dealer was making a 25% gross profit on gasoline. Today, they're making a 5% gross profit on gasoline. So.
Brian Edisfold says most dealers must supplement their gas sales with convenience shops or repair service.
Well, what if this goes on, then does that mean the prices are going to continue to drop throughout the summer?
Prices are expected to remain stable, Don. They may drop a cent or two from the present $1.15 for regular self-serve and $1.21 for unleaded self-serve.
Kind of makes you feel bad, though, for the...
Well, what an error that must have been.
Oh, it must have been absolutely devastating.
Average gas price in 1984 was 93 cents.
Well, I know that a couple of people that I know of who work at a gas station, they say the company doesn't make a whole lot of money off the gas. Like they said, they make it off of concessions.
Right.
Selling those little, breakfast taquitos and things like that for $2 for a couple.
And imagine those that work in the gas stations get the brunt of the wrath of the customers that come in and complain about the high gas prices.
Oh, of course, because it's the attendant who's taking your credit card that's in charge of everything.
Well, another sad event, in addition to gas prices going up, and this is actually a little more serious, Bonnie Franklin, actress from One Day at a Time, passed away yesterday. Hmm. Franklin was 69. She played a very young single mom of two teenage kids. She was 29 when that show started in 1975, or actually very early 30s. Died of pancreatic cancer. The family,
oh, no.
Unfortunate. Ever watched the show?
No, I haven't.
Schneider was the best part of the show, but Anne Romano, Bonnie Franklin's character, was a great part of that show. I looked around for a commercial that Bonnie Franklin did. I didn't want to play the One Day at a Time theme or clips from the show, but because you'll see that on all the tabloid shows the next couple of days.
Sure, sure.
But in the last episode of MASH, which was 30 years ago, this last Thursday, and we talked about that last week, a TV movie was promoted. And this was, you know, I watched this clip a few times, and I'm still not sure what the movie's about, but Bonnie Franklin stars in it, and I thought we could just kind of play that in homage to Ms. Franklin. Let's listen to this commercial.
Then Bonnie Franklin and Robert Klein are looking for love in the funniest way. Time Daily co-stars in Your Place,
Status,
or Mine, right after Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, Wednesday. This is...
So her only line on that promo was sadist. I'm not sure what, you know, it wasn't part of the collection. I'm reading her bio here from the New York Times. I don't see that as being one of her highlights of her film career. But that movie aired 30 years ago this week, and may she rest in peace.
I wonder how she felt about that being her only line in that whole thing.
I'm sure the movie had some great lines. They had to pick the best line to promote the movie. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we will have Roy Findon on KLB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities on KLB Club 1220. I am Tom Osmond. Next 50 minutes or so, we're going to talk a little bit about the broadcasting past with a friend of mine, Roy Findon. Good morning, Roy.
Good morning, Tom.
I was fortunate enough to meet Roy. We were at the Paddock Museum Hall of Fame dinner 4 years ago, perhaps. I think it was the year that...
I think it was.
The year Louis Anderson hosted, I think.
Yes.
We were both there at the same table and was fortunate enough to talk to Roy and said, you might have some broadcast material I could use on tcmedianow.com.
You bet.
That's right. And to those listening, if you want to check out some of that material, tcmedianow.com, tcmedianow on Facebook. Roy is a member of the Museum of Broadcasting Hall of Fame, the Paddock Museum Hall of Fame, inducted in 2002. And I'll just read a couple segments from his bio on the, on the Hall of Fame.
All right.
A talented broadcaster in his own right, Roy Findon's greatest contribution to the industry had been as a teacher.
Mm.
So many people who saw you on the air might not know that you were also an instructor at Brown, what's now called Brown College,
yes,
for 35 years.
It's true.
So tell me a little bit about Minneapolis native, and many people we talk here,
yes,
came here to work and then stayed here. But you grew up here.
It's true. Yes, yes, in Minneapolis. And in fact, if I tried to pinpoint the first time I appeared on the radio, this will surprise you. It surprises me. I don't often remember it. In first grade. At Calhoun Grade School, which is where Calhoun Square is now. That was the grade school. It was June Dairy Month, and that's always big, of course, in Minnesota.
Sure.
And on the John Ford Morning News, 7:45 a.m., sponsored by the milk producers, they selected some grade school folk to come in and read a one-sentence promotional line about milk. One sentence. And I was one of the four that was selected. Oh, boy. And so I think there were four of us. We rode the bus downtown to the Wesley Temple Building, to the WTCN studio, and the teacher was along, and we went up, and we read our line.
What was the line?
Oh, I have no idea.
Milk does a body good?
Something nice about milk.
Did you invent got milk?
Good heavens, no.
You'd be a millionaire.
If I was in first grade, that would be 1946. So I don't even think they had audio tape. I think they recorded us on a transcription. But anyway, then it was on the next morning on the 7:45 John Ford News.
Did the whole family gather around to listen to the line?
Most of them did. Well, it's not that many.
We still may find that line somewhere. We may find it somewhere.
Yeah, we have to be flying around in the ether. But if you have a most sensitive antenna, who knows what might be flying around in the ether? And John Ford is one of those people that made the transfer from radio to television in the earlier days. He was one of the early news anchors. I think he was on Channel 9, but I could be wrong about that.
So you had your broadcast debut.
Yes.
And did that give you the broadcasting bug, or is that what...
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I didn't actually... Well, of course, I listened to the radio a lot. We all did there in the 50s when we had some really fine personality radio. We had the birthing of Top 40 radio, WDGY. Ooh-hoo. And the story is told, by the way, of one of the fellows that was working at WDGY when that change came to Top 40. Because WDGY had been a typical full-service station. They had a huge record library and played music. And the stores people came in and said, okay, the story may have been embellished, but they backed a truck up to the back door and took all of those records from that record library and put them in the truck and came back in with a little rack of 40 records and said, here we go.
Top 40? Only 40.
Top 40, over and over.
What were some of the top 40 hits at that time?
Oh, gosh. Well, of course, it was Elvis Presley's
era. I was going to say that.
Yeah, any of those. But it was still a wide enough top 40 that you would have Patti Page singing a nifty ballad and an interesting variety.
Was like CCO playing this kind of stuff at the time, or was this too modern for?
No, they wouldn't have been playing the top 40 songs. No,
right. Because in this day, this is the era of all, what was it called? Where you have news, music, talk. You have the whole.
Oh yeah, the full service,
the whole thing,
and most stations did that. And also just ahead of that, the network stations had their dramatic programs too.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that was the time that television gradually took over that role. No longer are you listening to Dragnet on the radio. You're watching Dragnet on television.
That's right.
So what's a radio station to do if television has siphoned off that? And then just at that time, a wonderful coincidence, the idea of Top 40 radio. And you could say, a person might say, that helped to just save radio as a medium there in the middle 50s.
So after graduating high school, was it straight to Brown Institute?
It was.
Did you have some other careers before that?
Nope, that was all. Well, during high school, I lived out in near Excelsior, and I worked summers in the amusement park.
Oh, sure.
So anything you want to know about cotton candy,
We might have a show just on the amusement park coming up this summer. But
that would be a good thing.
We'll do it. Let's talk about Brown Institute, though. Tell me about Brown Institute. Now it's Brown College, and let's talk about Brown Institute in the 1950s when you went.
Oh, sure.
Was it down and up on Lake Street when you?
It was on Lake Street. Yes, indeed. Yep. Upstairs on the second floor, one in the center of a two-story building on East Lake Street, and three studios and one electronics classroom.
One electronics classroom, right. And what, after graduating from Brown, what was a two-year program in those days?
No, it was less than a year.
Okay.
Less than a year.
Get your FCC license, and then you're ready to...
Third class restricted radio telephone operator's permit is what I have.
So there was a time that you actually had to have, the FCC had to approve people who were on the air. You didn't just get to go on and...
I think that's a pretty wide definition of approve. The approval was for technical to be able to read the transmitter.
Mm-hmm.
They did not approve the talent.
Mm-hmm. So after Brown, you went to WSPT Stevens Point.
That's true. Yes, it did. Yep.
And were a disc jockey, and then eventually KRIB.
In Mason City, Iowa.
And then back to Minnesota at KDHL.
In Faribault.
And after all that, you come back to Minneapolis, and you become a teacher at the institute you were
yes.
at 6 years ago. Now, tell me a little bit about you. You'd done some radio, and what brought you back to teaching?
It was a call from, well, it was a combination of calls. I was going to do a career day event at the high school in Faribault, and so I called up to Brown to ask to send a few brochures. I could show those to the students as one of the career opportunities. And shortly after that, or maybe it was the same call, one of the people from Brown called and said, hey, have you ever thought about teaching? And I'm not sure that I had, but that sounded interesting because my experience at Brown was just a very, very positive experience. A great crew and a fun program, of course. What could be better than teaching people how to do this?
And I'm imagining it was not to get too personal in this respect, but a steadier paycheck probably, a little more... solid job than working in a couple different radio
yes,
stations.
Yes, I think you could say that, sure. Yep. Plus, I'm startled when I think of it. It was a 5-day-a-week job.
Oh, right.
In radio in those days, or television for that matter, it's always a 6-day week with 1 day off. And now suddenly here it was, ooh.
And you had weekends
week,
off.
Weekends, not Wednesday. A couple of years at KDHL, my day off was Wednesday, which is really kind of nice because everybody else is working. So whatever you want to do.
Doctor, the car repairs, you're first in line.
You bet.
So you're a young guy when you joined the faculty at Brown Institute. How many teachers were there at that point?
Oh gosh, half dozen, I think, probably.
And compared to when you were there even a few years before, television was now in color and broadcasting itself was evolving rapidly. I'm guessing there's a lot more aspiring broadcasters when you were there as an educator in the 1960s than there was when you graduated not long before.
Oh, yes. And then the size of the school, I could stand on Lake Street where the school was on the second floor, one hallway, a couple of studios, and show you how the school expanded across the street and over to that corner and over to that corner. And so we had more radio studios. We had the television studio then and students to fill them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, again, my guess is where I fit in today's Flashback Twin Cities. You decided to moonlight again. You decided that you wanted to work 7 days a week again because you're working at Brown 5 days a week. And about 1970 or so, that station over on University Avenue. How did you get the position over at KSDP to do voiceover and weather?
Well, at KSDP, the job that was open was what is called a booth announcer, and that was the voice that you heard between programs saying, "This is KSDP TV, Minneapolis, St. Paul," and that was not on camera, that was off camera, so that's radio with somebody else trying to switch
over the slide. Right?
Exactly. And so they needed somebody to be a part-time booth announcer. It was a couple of days a week, I think, nights a week, and maybe some weekends. And so I did that and enjoyed it very much. And while I was doing that, the person that was doing the weekend weather left, Pete Evanson left. And so now there was an opportunity for weather. And so I said, I'll bet I could do that. And they agreed that maybe you could. And so I did it one night, and I finished on time, and they liked that, and said, okay.
And you were able to use a Sharpie marker and draw on the map. And
big black marker.
Make sense of all those charts and graphs.
The highs and the lows.
Let's, I play this track very often, but it's almost like our second theme song here at the show. And
3-3.
Number 3, that's right.
The Guild of Performing Arts at 333-8268 for reservations.
Eyewitness News, the Northwest's most complete, comprehensive, and up-to-the-minute coverage. With weatherman Roy Finden, sportscaster Ed Caro, and anchorman Stan Turner.
Good evening, everyone. We are coming on the air at this.
I love hearing that old theme song.
They played it live for us when we were at the broadcast dinner a few years ago. We had the live band there, and they were able to
That's
play it.
That's right. They did. Well, I'd forgotten that.
That track was from WPBI. It was called the Action News Theme, and Philadelphia was the first station to have that. And Channel 5 got a lot of years out of use of that, theme, and we play it all the time here.
I thought the last time I'd heard it, I think, on one of your pieces, that what a person should have if he knew how to do it, and I'm an analog guy, so of course I don't know how to do it, would be to have that as my ringtone.
There's a way to do that.
I'm sure,
give me your cell phone afterward. We'll take care of that. So you're at KSDP and you did weekends. So you're working at Brown 5 days a week and doing weekends. What was that like? You're working 7 days a week?
Well, it wasn't the beginning. Well, it wasn't 7 days a week because in those days, the major newscasters, the major lineup were out, worked 6 days.
Okay.
So I was just doing one day.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Saturday. And then it was shortly after Ron Majors started that they shifted to having the major players working only Monday through Friday. So then my weather became 2 days, 2 nights. And so, yes, I was working 7 days a week, but still on camera for 3.5 minutes. It isn't like I was working hard.
Wait a second now. I thought this broadcast. Wait a second now. So are you telling your students this kind of stuff? You don't really work when you go into broadcasting.
Well, compared to other things.
And, no, it's
and,
true.
And every day when I, almost every day as I'm driving somewhere, I look around and look, identify the jobs I'm glad I don't have.
Very true.
Now, there's the UPS truck trying to find a place to park.
When it's 100 degrees outside or it's horrible.
Right. And here's a big tanker trying to find a way to back into a Holiday Station. I'm glad I'm not doing that. And then there are all those people building the light rail in the winter. I'm glad I don't. So compared to any of those.
Really does put things into a little bit of perspective, doesn't it?
Well, stand in front of the camera and of course, prepare the valid information and present it in what would hope an interesting way. But it's not hard physical labor.
That's not at least yet. I mean, the way broadcast consolidation is coming, it might come that way. But my guest Roy Finder today, talking about his days at Brown Institute and at KSGP. Let's talk a little bit about those KSGP days, the early days when you first got there, and you were what was it like working there?
Always very pleasant. Everyone is very pleasant. Very high degree of determination any night to make the program as good as possible, because one of the things that makes the Twin Cities the major news player that it always has been is the extreme competition for audience among the news programs. And so at KSGP, the producers, all the people on the air, the writers, the reporters, they're working hard to put it all together every day. And it's a pleasant place to work.
Well, and at the time, this was a record-breaking moment in KSGP's history. I mean, they were getting shares of 51%, which is, you know, it may happen again some point, but it's been a while since they've been number one and that dominant in the market or even the country.
That's true. They go up and down. The audience, KSDP's audience, declined in that major moment in 1968 when Channel 4 opened up the 10 o'clock news. I think they called it The Scene Tonight. And the newscaster and the weathercaster and the sportscaster were all in the same shot at the same desk. We'd never seen that. You know, 20 years of broadcasting, the news was a separate program, the weather was a separate program, the sports was a separate program. Those people could have been in different states. It didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
But now, suddenly, there are the three of them.
Well,
and when it came time for the weather, Dave Moore looked over at old Bud and said, "Well, Bud, what's the weather going to be? We've never seen that anywhere before." And so that was terribly popular. And so Channel 4 took a big chunk of audience at that time.
Well, and your boss didn't really like to be second to Channel 4.
Isn't that true?
Mr. Hubbard.
Yes.
Both of them. Let's listen to a little bit of a weather forecast from 1980.
May I begin with a snap quiz? Oh, well, certainly. All right, I want you to look at the monitor here in the studio and see if you can identify this bridge. It's a local bridge.
I'd say that's a high bridge in St. Paul.
Exactly right.
Oh,
that is, yes.
This was not rigged, ladies and gentlemen.
No. This was in 1904, and it's not when it was being built. It was just after it was hit by a tornado, a storm system that tornadoes touched down in both downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I bring that up because I want to remind you that tomorrow night, right after Eyewitness News, the KSDP Weather Services program, The Killer Tornadoes, A New Defense, will be on. And I want you to watch. The word ubiquitous comes to mind when we talk about the 80s on today's map. Ubiquitous meaning all over the place. That sounds strange, like a quiz bowl question too, doesn't it? Well, look at this. 80s, and 70s were even wider ranging. It's got to be a...
Doesn't that sound pleasant right now?
That's quite a page from whatever book that was.
That's right. That was it's the High Bridge, and this video is on tcmedianow.com. Giving a little quiz to the news anchor, spontaneously, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes. Everything was spontaneous. Nothing planned.
So talk to me. So you work on KSDP, doing weather, and you weren't a meteorologist. You were a broadcaster.
Yes.
You weren't a trained. You didn't have
scientist. No.
How did you gain the knowledge to be able to just broadcast weather?
Well, first. From being in radio, where we did weather in the radio, and doing it on television is a little different because you have to be doing something that people can see, but the information is all available on the various wire services, so just collecting it and putting it together. And then when the whole corral of meteorologists showed up at KSDP, I learned an awful lot from them, and was even able to qualify for the AMS seal of approval for television weathercasting.
Well, I was going to get to that because it's a big deal, or was a big deal at the time, to have that AMS tagline on your title when you were
sure.
doing the weather.
Yeah.
And at first they were called professional meteorologists, and then they got the AMS, and it was who was AMS and who wasn't AMS, and you had the AMS tag on your...
Yes, I had to pass a written test and then submit some tapes of my work to the board, and lo and behold, they sent me back my seal of approval.
You couldn't be called a meteorologist, but you could get your AMS.
Yeah, right, sure.
So beyond, and talk about some of your students you had at this period. So you've taught a lot of, we'll call locally famous people here in this town.
Yes, I think I'd be reluctant to try to begin to name them because I'd be sure I was going to miss someone.
Name a couple.
Well, I suppose the highest profile one right today is Chuck Hagel, the newly appointed defense secretary. Chuck was here from Nebraska in 1966.
We were talking about that off air a couple weeks ago. I don't think people know that. I don't think it's really been publicized too much here in town here that he was a Brown Institute graduate and was a student of yours. What was his aspirations? Do you recall?
Just like most of the others in the studio at that time, they wanted to be on the radio.
Sure.
But it was shortly after he left Brown that he joined the Army.
Right.
And then he worked down in Nebraska as a newscaster when he came back, and then on into some other private businesses.
Well, he'll be on TV and radio plenty the next couple of years here.
Yes.
So his dream will come true.
Yes, and I'll sit and critique as I'm watching.
Well, it is a bit nerving for me, as I we're talking about there. I didn't take the traditional broadcast education here, and I imagine you have a set of notes for me after the show here. But no, it's great having you here. Again, my guest is Roy Findon. Let's take a break. We come back, I want to talk a little bit more about Channel 5 and the High School Bowl, and then Days of Care and more on Brown, and I'm still going to try to get you to talk about some more of your students and maybe some stories.